think we vary on how we vote on those drastically. And maybe I'm not coming from the same perspective as other people, or vice versa. But to be objective and to be fair to all people, I feel like they should be treated no different.
Well, here's what I think about in that circumstance, is that you've had a nagging code case and you got fines that have accrued, and the fines are probably out of proportion to the value. I've always contended that I'd be better off to punch Burn in the nose than to have a code enforcement lien. I'll pay less money for punching him in the nose. It's just the way the law works. A daily fine can accrue into thousands and thousands of dollars. And what the object is, as I understand it, is that we get compliance and we get a community that looks and acts better than it presently does. So if you've had a nagging violation going on and on, counselor property owner that somehow lost the property, and someone else comes in and says, I'm going to buy the property and I'm going to fix this stuff up, and I want to come to you, code board, and say, listen, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to put the money into the property to fix it. If you'll reduce the fine, that's what I want to do. And that's probably the argument that you hear in general terms. I think it's up to your discretion as a board, and you have that discretion to determine what to do and also to condition performance. For instance, if someone came in, they said they've got an $80,000 lien on a piece of property that's maybe worth $120,000 at the best, and it needs to be fixed. And they want to repair the structure, get it in shape, and they'll give you a timeline to get it done if you give them the reduction. If you gave them a conditional waiver of that, you might determine that that is something that's a reasonable objective in order to get back to compliance. Each case is different, and you have to take those circumstances into account. And I know that the city has been pretty firm about not reducing fines irrespective of the facts. And that's a policy position, and it's something that you as a board, I think, have to consider, and perhaps there's even a need for direction from the commission. But the object of it in that circumstance, and the object in every instance, is to achieve compliance. And if you've got a fine screwed but not collected, a piece of property that's dormant and just looks horrible, and it's just going to continue that way, and someone will come in and take that same piece of property and make it serviceable and repairable or repaired, the community objective is to not have that eyesore there any longer. It isn't to make someone, whoever that person is, bleed money just from a punishment perspective.
Well, you can't have a lien review unless your property's in compliance. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So property has to be in compliance before somebody comes.
Now, I'm sure you've had people who want to come for a review in advance. So, and
well,
you might
not too many. Well, we don't hear, but we have. Okay. And there are also caps on fines as well.
There is.
So, that, I mean, that's...
So there's a cap before a lien is recorded. I think they can be reinitiated. So you've got multiple, I think.
What?
Multiple. In other words, you hit the cap, record the lien, and move on with another fine. I think that does go on, too.
Please remember, though, you understand that the decision of what you want to do with the lien is your decision. That's why you're independent of the city. The commission's not telling you what to do. Staff is not telling you what to do. Nobody's directing you what to do. You make the decision based upon listening to the facts and evidence that's in front of you, and you make that's your decision. In some cases, it may very well want to do what Jim said, where you want to reward someone for paying their own money and fixing something, putting it back on the tax rolls, which benefits everybody. And then it may be a situation where you manage to do with this individual who doesn't want to work with you. I mean, I want to do is give them as much leeway. That's your call.
And I never didn't mean it for anything other than it is absolutely your call. And the one place where there is, if there was a proposed stipulation, you can decide whether or not to endorse that. A lot of boards do use stipulations. It's helpful in terms of proceeding time-wise and getting it done and helping things move along.
I think when it comes to individuals who are coming before the board and they're sincerely trying to improve it, we give them every benefit of the doubt, and we do whatever we can to help them, as does the inspectors. But, you know, there are a lot of different kinds of cases that come in that are somewhat
mind-boggling. Yeah, and that's why when you look at them, I think you have to look at each one individually, and if there is any instance where you think there are things that are left to be done, the reduction doesn't happen unless those things are done. I understand if the lien review is not happening until there is compliance. That actually may be something that limits your ability to get things done. We may want to talk about that internally to see if you, having someone that's making a decision whether or not to buy and repair, and they need that answer ahead of time. Because really the object is have things repaired and made serviceable, or if we move to the other step that we're not talking about today, we need to just have them gone one way or another.
Also, what's happened in a few situations where a person wants to buy a piece of property with the assurance from the board that if they repair it, they'll get some relief. And what we've done is we've gone ahead and we've made sure that we made the thing based upon a closing. So we'll go ahead and agree to something, but eventually have to close the property. So there's some different issues over there. But you're right. But most of the time, I'd say most 9 out of 10 times, they've got to be in compliance.
Right.
There's been a few exceptions, but very, very rare.
You know, we haven't had too many that aren't in compliance. What I know that happens, though, is that if somebody buys the property and it's not in compliance, they get some kind of permit, which they have to do. I mean, this is where it gets all convoluted. They have to get a permit, but while they have a permit, we can't fine them or they can't be brought before the board. So, but the permit then can be extended and extended and extended, so it appears as if nobody's doing anything.
That circumstance is changing.
Okay.
I'm aware of that, and staff is aware of that. We've talked about it, and that is not the way things are going to continue to work.
Cool. I think one of the the most recent recent issues that's come up is persons bought a piece of property for an investment. He's went through the procedures, the mortgage and the taxes have been paid. But then the city lien that it wasn't, they didn't know about it, ignorance of the law, whatever. They come up and it's tailing in and it doesn't go away. So they want to have that eliminated. And that's come up recently, you know, the ceremony reviews.
Yeah, so, they buy a tax deed sale or something.
Yeah.
Well, a tax deed.
Well, and as you well know in the paper, I mean, you know.
Yeah. A tax deed sale, first and foremost, you take subject to any restrictions that are out there.
Right,
and
exactly.
And you can do a title search. And
right.
But the instance that Vern's pointing out is that if there was a lien in the public records of the city, but not recorded in the public records of the county. They still have the ability to make inquiry with the city to determine if there is an outstanding lien there. And there is also provisions in title work, it's called Chapter 159 lien, that utilities and those sorts of things. So normal inquiry for closing by any practitioner that understands what they're supposed to do should include that inquiry. And we have the means to answer their question if somebody cares to call. So that's it's there. And when they say they didn't know, it's because they didn't try hard enough to find out.
I agree.
If I can say, I think sometimes y'all on the board have a difference of opinion, and that's good. Y'all are individuals. And it's okay to have a difference of opinion. And healthy deliberation is a good thing, especially if someone was to appeal. To know that y'all have discussed, talked about it, and made decisions with open discussion. So when you differ, that's not a bad thing.
That's the reason that the city has a citizens advisory board and not just strictly going to special magistrate.
Right. It's to do the things that we've talked about earlier in the day, and what Tony said is so important because court of law, in particular, the dedicated decisions being made in the sunshine, and that the conclusion is reached in a public hearing based on what you hear at a public hearing, not what somebody told you before the meeting coming in. And that's an essential component to due process of law and being treated fairly when you appear before government. So that's the concepts that Tony's referencing, that someone would assert, well, I wasn't afforded due process of law if they're in an appellate process.
And with that, although I can... Like I said, for a very long time, I think based on our agenda and our intent, I'll go ahead and turn to Charlie and see, Charlie, if there's something specific you want to deal with, or if we're actually up to break, but either way, whichever way.
I'll be quick.
Okay.
Okay, so good afternoon. Good morning, everybody.
Seems like
I think I was going to go to the history of the board, how the statute evolved over the years from the city courts to the code enforcement board. I'm not going to do that because we're short on time. What I do want to do is I want to talk a little bit about the role of the board attorney. Originally, when this 162 came about, the cities and the counties had their city attorney or their city attorney serve in both capacities. And they found an inherent conflict because the board is independent of the city, making decisions independent of the city. The city can't overturn your decision, although, I'll be honest with you, there's been some situations over the years, not recently, where city commissioners tried to overturn decisions of the code board, but it doesn't happen anymore, and it doesn't happen here. So, if your decision is to be appealed, it goes to the circuit court. In 30 days to file the appropriate motion, and it goes to the circuit court. So, you act as if you're quasi-judicial, as if you're a judge. So, you understand that there should be no, anything, what you hear at the meeting, what they present to you, what you make your decision. You do not have to agree with the city. You could say, I won't agree with you, I find that I dismissed the case, or I found there's no violation here. Nothing requires you to agree with the city. They're doing their job, and they do an excellent job. You guys do a great job out here. Most of the time, you're probably going to agree with the city. But it's not necessarily that you have to do that. And the reason that they came up with the board attorney was they changed the statute because they felt it was an inherent conflict, that he can't be advising the city staff and you. What they were trying to do the city, they'd have the code enforcement officer, supervisor present the case, and the city attorney represent the board. It didn't work. So that's why they came independent of the city. Which brings you to the next thing. We talked a little about quasi-judicial. You act as if you're a judge, collectively. We don't need to be in a city. We had a few situations where we went ahead and we tried to, things kind of get out of hand. The only people that can come up and testify are the code officers and their witnesses. It's not a public hearing. Not the person in the street can come up and wanted to testify. I think we had a situation once we had a, I think it was a realtor in town that came up to you and wanted to talk about things. Can't do that. I remember being jockeyed in one of our meetings at one time. So we can't do that. It has to be, if they want to call a witness, they can do so. And that's fine. We don't call witnesses for the public. Okay? It's not our role. In addition, we don't fix the people's problems. Sometimes we feel like we wanted to help people out. I had a guy, one of the boards that I was on, he used to give people their coins card, his board member. People his card at the end of the meeting. Come and see me later. And we've got to stop that. Because that's can't do that.
That's why it's conflict of interest.
Yeah, you can't do that. Get me on the board. We had a situation one time where the board member was protesting outside his establishment with a sign. And it was on the board. You can't do that. You know, you would see a judge do that. You don't do that. So remember you need to be completely independent of the situation. You make decisions based upon what you hear in the room. Evidence and testimony have said it to you. You do not, you will drive by the place by happen to buy, you know, it's a small town. It happens. Okay,
right.
That's okay. You run into each other at the supermarket, at Publix, you want to say hello to each other, that's okay. Just don't discuss the case. Because it gets to be, Jim could probably tell you about the situation where we had an individual passing a note to the chairman of the board wanting to go to the bathroom, in the men's room. That became an investigation with the state attorney's office. All because he wanted to go to the bathroom. So please don't do that. So
I think we've all been careful.
I try to rein in. When I get a little nervous, I get a little.
Consequently, sometimes I can tell by our faces we're all thinking different things, and we come up with different amounts of money that we think they should be fined, and some are really kind, and some of us are kind of hard nosed, and. And you're always kind. I have never heard a harsh thing out of your mouth. But I think sometimes in those circumstances, it would be so helpful not to discuss the case, but to discuss why we came to the conclusions we did on the fines.
We can do that.
There's no reason you can't discuss that.
Right.
And you're a collegial board. I think all three of us have said to you, you are independent people, and we all recognize that, but your decisions effectively become one person's decision, that person being comprised of your collective personalities and reflected by the majority vote. And so, in respect to the nature of your decision-making, first, if it's whether or not you think there is compliance, then you've reached that conclusion, you come to the next stage at some point in the proceedings as to what you think the appropriate fine amount is. And each
that
thing,
part's never contested. It's the part where we come back and somebody wants a reduction.
Understood. I said at some point, and I don't mean today or tomorrow, it could be later on, but you collectively have the opportunity to debate in public and talk about those things. Now, Charlie didn't talk to you about the weight of the evidence, the burden of proof. I'm sure he will. And also he mentioned to you, you're permitted to be friends. You're permitted to go to the same parties. You're permitted to do all those things. You just can't talk about the business of the board. You can talk about your golf game, what you had for supper. Doesn't matter. Just don't talk about the board. So, I mean, it's not expected that you won't be friendly with each other in circumstances beyond your position as board member. You just don't talk about those things. That's a violation of the law, but it's not that you can't be in the same room. You just can't meet, you know, to discuss board matters in private. They must be in the sunshine.
And Jim was mentioned, your standard is clear and convincing evidence, basically. It's not beyond reasonable doubt, which is a high standard like in a criminal case. It's not 50-50. Basically clear and convincing evidence, basically it's just standard. And you don't have to all agree to that. So you may feel they raise it, you may feel they're not. And if you vote against it, the motion, you vote against the motion. That's your prerogative. You have the right to do so.
Under parliamentary procedure, is it proper to have a motion on the floor before you have this general discussion?
I've seen cities do it both ways. Some just have a general discussion and the chairman will answer a motion or the chairman will present a motion. I've seen situations where we're not going to be able to discuss and get a motion on the floor.
It's whatever works the best for you. The beauty of the motion is you at least have a concrete proposal that each person can say, I do or do not like that idea. And when you go to the burden of proof that Charlie mentioned, the picture of Lady Justice with the scales when she's blindfolded, if you notice, her hands are relatively like this.
Yes.
The greater weight is just a little more than the other side. And the burden of proof is with the city first, and then from the perspective of the defendant, if you will, it's for them to rebut the evidence to show that that greater weight meant by the city somehow was incorrect, and they're trying to shift it the other direction. And I know it's a graphic example, but actually that is the standard that we all learned by as we went through law school and so on. The greater weight is just this modest balance in favor of the conclusion versus without reasonable doubt we're like this. That's not the standard that you have.
One other question, John. Did you say that the city commission has not overruled decisions of this code board?
That's correct.
And it had never happened?
I'm not saying it never happened. I'm just saying that.
Legally, it should not happen.
Oh, but it has happened in the recent past, twice. Right. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
I can tell you the cases later.
We're telling you, the three of us, in our vacuous world as lawyers, it should not happen.
Oh, that's what we thought
as
a board.
I thought that the city commission had the ability to reverse the authority, to reverse a fine that we imposed on someone.
Oh, that's a different issue.
The ultimate.
That's a different issue.
Okay. When a fine is...
That's an obligation that's owed to the city.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And the answer would be yes, they would.
Okay. So they'll,
that clears that.
This
is what the city has done is it's gone ahead and designated or delegated, that's a better word, that decision to give to you as a lien review.
Right.
They don't have to. Some cities just don't do that. Some cities will just, elderly reviews go to the city. Because it's an obligation that's owned by the city, not by the board. It's not the board. Once you come up with your final order and it's your court, it's not yours anymore. It goes to the city. Now, city wants to send it back to you, that's fine. The fine. Not the case. The fine.
So we don't need to get on their high horse when they do that.
One final thing I want to bring up with you is, I'm not going to talk about the, you know, public record, sunshine, ex parte, all that. Talk about it in the past. There, unfortunately, is very little case law out there on code enforcement boards. Not a lot out there. Usually what happens is there's an attorney general's opinion. Attorney general's opinion are not the law. They're persuasive, but they're not the law. And I'm going to try to start getting you copies of AG opinions that come out. I'll give them to you one at a time. And if you want at the end of the meeting, take a few minutes aside, if you have a question about the AG opinion, we can do so. But I find instead of having this discussion once every 6 months and having a workshop, you can get some stations and information during the year.
Yeah.
It might be beneficial.
That's good. Yeah.
But I want you to point out that Attorney General's opinions are not law. They think they are a problem. But They're just their opinions, but they are persuasive. And there are quite a few attorney general opinions dealing with code boards, because the city attorney has the ability to go to the attorney general and ask for an opinion on a code issue.
If I might just elaborate on Charlie's reference to the word persuasive. The word persuasive, and the way that he uses it, is if you cite such a thing to the court, which we do, if there's an AG opinion that covers something that you're interested in, lawyers will often cite that to the court. The court may be persuaded by it, or the court may completely reject it. And so the idea is that you've got a hypothetical situation written by people that are supposedly knowledgeable, and this is the conclusion that they've reached. You take that into consideration in your thinking, and it's not controlling in what your decision is. It's just another opinion, another way to look at something, which you can consider within your own intellect as to what you think that means in the application of the case that you have. It's rare that you'll have a perfect match of a hypothetical AG opinion, or even sometimes they use actual facts, that your case will match up precisely with that. So when it's persuasive, it is perhaps, the use of that term is that it's a term that should be given, it's perhaps more considerate, should have more consideration than if just somebody on the street gives you an opinion, because hopefully they're reasoned and objective, and that's the idea.
We'll go over research.
Yes.
Could we go back 1 second to witnesses? Very often, a neighborhood will come in and, all upset because there's a code case that's been bothering them for a long time. Who says to them, who has the authority to say to them, you may come up and testify, or...
You do.
I do. Oh,
now, you don't have to. There's no requirement to have the whole 20 people testify.
Well,
you could say, I want a spokesman, or I want
right,
two police
exactly.
people. But okay. Make sure that you allow both sides.
I actually want to challenge that a little bit and ask Tony to weigh in. Because from a standpoint of just a free-for-all of witnesses, if we stick with the model of offense and defense, which is where we're at, the city is the prosecutor of the offense, and they
right.
call the witnesses that they think are relevant to the case. From
right.
the perspective of witnesses as to we should hang them, that is not what your proceeding is for. It's supposed to be a factual proceeding, and the defense side may have witnesses they wish to call to
correct.
Refute.
Right, that's what I meant. So
I think that the explanation is broader than I believe it to be, which is the testimony should be relevant, and
right.
they should be called by one side or the other, not just
right.
like, let's rush the dais and tell
no,
them.
No, that's what
right.
I meant,
no. I mean, that doesn't happen. I mean, generally, what happens is that the person has to be, that's testifying as a witness, has to have some kind of direct affect.
And they need to they also need to be called by one side
right.
or the other.
This one's right
okay, well, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
Okay, so who... Okay.
We just talked about it a few minutes ago.
Okay.
Yeah, often there are witnesses that have been called by the city because
right.
they have relevant information.
Right.
Like, and it's a group of neighbors, let's say, for instance. And what you want to do is determine, one, is there a collective
right.
Discussion?
I'm just saying sometimes I don't think those people that are in the audience actually know that they need to ask you to testify or let the code enforcement people know that they want to testify. They just come there and I see them because, from up there, and I know that they're there to testify. And so I'm not quite sure what my role is in allowing them to testify.
You are a referee in a basketball game.
Yeah.
And the teams that are on the field. They're not the guy that jumps off the bench and runs
right,
down the court
right,
and gets
no.
the ball and goes to score. It doesn't count.
Right.
So from the perspective of the cases, because it is, to a certain extent, a competitive process of prosecution and defense, and they will call the witnesses they think they need to call to make
okay.
their case. Likewise, the other side will call witnesses they
right.
think they have that could perhaps refute their case.
Right.
So the subject matter should be relevant to the content. The witness should be qualified in that they have direct or personal knowledge of the case, and that gives you the information that you need. if you had an open forum for every case,
well, we don't.
Your hearings would, I know, but I mean,
we know we
your
right.
cases would go on
right.
for days,
right.
and you lose
right.
management of the case
we don't.
Altogether.
Right.
Yeah, and that's where I think, as you were both saying, in terms of bringing it into balance, I mean, we're not draconian. We're in great part
right.
like, no, nobody can say anything.
Right.
But even when you have someone that's sitting out in the audience who has a desire because they believe they have something relevant,
right?
I think maybe it's happened a couple of times
it
where
has.
Someone has come and either tapped one of the inspectors or pulled my tie.
Right. Correct.
And ultimately we find out maybe it was, I didn't bring that person up. They had nothing
right.
to, but that may be at least for comfort's sake the thing to do. But it's something that ultimately, again, that's your judgment, and my judgment in calling them is only on their representation they have something relevant. Typically, the typical situation is that whatever information they have or whatever they intend, our inspector already is aware of that,
right.
has made me aware of what we anticipate we're bringing forward, and that's what makes them a relevant witness.
I think it's
unusual, but I know it's happened.
I mean,
where
you call a witness, and it'll be one of the, I'll just say a professional witness.
All right.
The people that usually come up before the board, they've been living with a violation for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. And they want
and
to
I mean,
know.
I knew,
right.
I, and I'm not exaggerating,
right.
10 years. And so they want to have a voice. And what Luigi is very good about is when they come up and, you know, the age-old, you know, I've seen them selling drugs, you know, I've seen a prostitute, you know, whatever the... and she pretty much quiets them down. But I think that a citizen that comes up before an open forum should have the right, if they've been living beside this and the city hasn't taken care of it in 10 years, I think they have a legitimate right to say what it is. I mean, they've taken the effort. They've taken the time.
Yeah, a couple of leads going here.
Remember
our
clause. The problem with the cop, Brian, is that the statute also says that it has to be a case of controversy presented by the city. They have to, it has to be their witness. And they can go up to staff or they would like to testify. And I think most of the time you're going to let them testify.
Yeah.
But I don't
yeah.
think we can just say anybody out there wanted to come up.
No, that's never, that's
yeah.
never
no,
been,
right.
you know, that's going to the exaggeration.
Right, right.
But I think that what Luigi is referring to, whether it's allowed to have a citizen, and Mr. Jackson does.
Yeah.
I'm not, definitely not saying that he does. But it's whether they're to be allowed, and I think that they should, if they have a legitimate.
Well, and probably the place for that sort of input, if there is a place, is not in the factual determinations that you make. But what may be appropriate is when you are considering what the fine should be.
Yes.
And that is a different circumstance.
Yeah. Yeah.
But from the perspective of the proceeding, the reason I said it's like you're the referee at a basketball game. Imagine the basketball game where you've seen it, where somebody jumps out of the stands and tackles a runner. If the game goes completely crazy. And then this isn't a game, but it does have rules that are meant to reach a fair conclusion for both sides. And but in terms of the suffering of the community and what the appropriate action is, probably at the point of the lien, even though compliance is the issue, that may be a place that you consider. But these gentlemen haven't had a chance to opine on that. And that's simply my opinion. And at the end of the day, you have three people here that are offering you their opinions.
But
you are the presiding
body. The scales adjusted the weight.
Right.
Well, that's on the evidence part. The
evidence
part is you've got to have relevance. In terms of the appropriateness of the action on a lien, that's a whole different subject, I think.
Yeah. And I guess the ultimate point, and this is one that you're saying it, and we're kind of saying it a lot of different ways, but the ultimate point is no matter what comes before you, you have to recognize it as how does it relate to the evidence on what we're here to prove. And if it's not related, it's you should be considering it. If it's something that's inappropriate
right.
or improper, and when you point out that sometimes Luigi has to kind of settle someone down and wants to talk about things that's just not related to the violation or not related, that's appropriate. And your considerations are considerations at that stage on facts for proving the violation.
Some of that's management of the meeting because we've had people get up there and they want to call names. this person's right. a prostitute, that person. Right. This is going on television, and we're sitting at the board.
The question is, does that relate to the broken garage door?
We can't allow that kind of statement to be. It's not right.
Right.
And.
Or the person's a drug addict.
Yeah, I think some of the witnesses need to be instructed as to what their testimony has to relate to.
I think that gets back to what Attorney Jackson said. Once we're supposed to look at the evidence, that's first me. And that's how we weigh it on the evidence. Yeah. And I say, regardless of what come up about who, it's still the evidence that we have.
Correct.
But,
and it's just the more the suggestion is to avoid your proceedings from being hijacked by people that want to have another agenda besides what you're there for. And it's just the time that's consumed that you have and recognition that your time should be respected and made efficient and not derailed by, I hate you, so I'm going to call you three different
names. Exactly. I think what happens is that the city doesn't live with the problem.
Understood.
People that live next door live with the problem, and they may be able to offer evidence of a different nature than the city can, other than, I see the weeds, I see this, but it may be the rats in the other person's house that's being drawn there that hasn't been seen because...
So that's
what I try and weigh, is do they have do they have something to say that's going to be different or more,
Well, everybody here is here to try and support your ability to conduct your hearings. At the end of the day, you guys conduct the hearings.
None
of the people over here do. And we're trying to help you in terms of how the process works, how it may be reviewed, how your decisions can be protected and defended, and how you get to exercise the duties that you have under the statute versus your obligations as a citizen in the community, which you're here taking care of your citizen obligations by being on the board, and that's why it's appreciated so much. Then we've got to outline the bounds, but it's your hearing at the end of the day. You're the ones conducting it.
Jim, when we talk about hijacking our process, I feel that way with attorneys. Some of our worst offenders, worst offenders in the community are slumlords. They don't come before us and present their defense or what they're going to do. They send some attorney that's very good at intimidation and blabbing about things that are totally not related to the specific. And we just kind of sit there and shocked.
Shut them down. Shut them down. It isn't relevant. And believe me, they all walk on two legs, the same as the rest of us.
Well, the only time they shut up is when he tells them to. Basically.
It's the chair of your meeting can do that as well. And if it isn't relevant, then you control your proceeding. And if they can't behave themselves, you got people that can take them out of the room. It is your hearing. Do not be intimidated by the fact that there's somebody there with a JD or whatever behind their name. I know a whole bunch of them. They're not nearly as scary as you think, but they can try to get over on you, and that's true.
But I find it somewhat perturbing that the people that are preying on the poor and have all of these slum units have the most money and send the best representative they can find to speak on their behalf and defend them for something that's indefensible.
And as hard as that is, you have to try and ignore that. Because that's a predetermination on your part that may or may not be correct. It's hard to do, and I understand that. But your each values are individual, and you have that, but you have to listen to the case. And you also have to remember as well, though, that attorney is a representative. From an evidentiary perspective, they don't have evidence unless they're actually testifying, which they ordinarily do not, and you ordinarily do not cross-examine them. But from the perspective of what they're presenting, if it's simply argument but not evidence, then they aren't proceeding in a relevant fashion, and they can be told to sit down.
Okay.
Let me just, I know we're running short on time. I do want to thank you guys. You've got a tough job. You're not an advisory board. You're a quasi-judicial board. It's more difficult than the average board with the city, so we appreciate all the time you put in, and it makes the city a better place for all of us.
Well, one thing I would like all of us to do, and I don't know how to do it so that we're not in trouble, but I think the PR in our community against the code enforcement officers, the board, and anybody in this business, we have a bad rap. We're all working towards the same goal, cleaning up this city and making it a good place to live. And you don't very rarely hear anybody defend any of us for anything. I know at public meetings, we're bashed on a regular basis, and I just lie down in my chair because I feel like there's just you'd be stoned if you stood up. Once in one meeting he did, and I was worried. And I would like to know what we can do to present to the public an accurate and better image, a better PR of some sort than what we're getting from the news and from the communities. I don't blame them for being frustrated. I live in one of these redevelopment areas, and I hate it too. I hate that these areas have been just let go, but it's not our fault. It's not like we're the ones doing it. It's we're the ones trying to prevent it and to change it. And I don't know if PR is even anybody's wheelhouse, but I think it needs to be done. And
I know for myself, I talk to a lot of people, and I don't think that this is a face of, that looks like it could be intimidated very by anyone. When I speak to people, they talk about, you know, especially when they hear that I'm on the code enforcement board, you know, they all have the instance where the city, you know, the city does have a cloud over it, no doubt about it. It has been for a number of years. You've lived here, and I've lived here for, and been a part of it for 40 years. But, you know, I always tell people that I think that we have a good city staff. I tell them that the board, they go by the codes, and that's what we expect. And I think it, the city is, wouldn't hurt for a little bit of PR.
I can only make a couple of points. In 12 years that I've been on the board, not once as a member of the News Journal attended a meeting. They write lots of stories, but they haven't once actually attended.
Right. I should tell you to get ready for another wave.
Right.
I've got a long email in my phone where they wish to do a series.
She called me one time about something else, and I said, if I were talking, how come you haven't? She said, I go to the magistrate, which has some of the more romantic cases than we get normally. And there's been three more romantic. Three commissioners in 12 years that have ever attended the code. Now, I realize they can get it on television now, so they may be watching. But as far as their attendance, Edith Shelley, Ruth Traeger, and Derek. Only three ever attended a meeting.
And the demands that they have on their time itself. Yeah, just from a reporting perspective.
But they're representing, when they're interviewed, this issue of code enforcement. At least as far as the board, they're not firsthand.
But just if I might, that recent article in respect to Traeger's headline, you had to read the article to see that there were roughly four outstanding violations, even though the reference was to 43 or whatever the case might be. And it was known by the reporter that virtually all of them had been resolved over time, and so there was compliance. Yet the headline was such that if you only read the headline, you had an entirely different impression.
It's an easy shot. All of
these people in the public are always being attacked for different things, as Kelly White was previously. And none of us really are comfortable with that, obviously. But I consistently write Pat Rice, and I do what I can from our perspective, but I think we need to do more. And if it, if anybody has any ideas of how we could do that, I'd like to sit down and talk to them. I just feel that we're a city who has the same goals, but we're fighting each other, and it shouldn't be.
I don't disagree with you.
I'd like to clarify. Now, are you saying that you want the city to do PR?
Somebody.
Not us. You not said that we can do it because we can't do
it.
I understood it to mean the city. And you know, the aspect is that they write what they're going to write.
Yeah.
If you saw the recent article about the shooting near the golf course, it was on Shady Place, which is physically near the golf course, but
I live
from a characterization of the golf course versus the neighborhood, it's the neighborhood. There's a big fence that separates it. I read the article. I thought, is there a body in front of the clubhouse?
Yeah, that's right. I live there. I thought they were looking around for it.
It's their form of addressing the community, and that's
so. Aside from the newspaper, there's what I started off with today was there's so much misinformation. People have no idea what anybody's job is, whether it's our job, your job, as far as code enforcement goes. They have no idea of the procedures. Okay, how many times you tell them and you try and tell them, that's just the nature of it. Because it's complicated. It's not easy. But I think, and what I heard at a Save Our Neighborhoods meeting from people that are appointed to this new board that I've never heard of and is not advertised, I mean, that's a problem, that we don't know about these things. And that there's misinformation out there. The two of the people that you appointed told me that they were appointed to review the fines that the code board placed upon the case, upon people, and that they could lower them if they wanted to. They told me that's what their job was.
You mean the city, not me. So.
Uh-huh. Yes, I'm sorry. But that's, you know, that's what's out. That's an example of what's out there, and I couldn't refute it because I know nothing about it. You know, and I'm going, I just am glued to that.
There is no doubt that we have lots of work to do.
Okay, that's what we need to do.
There's no disagreement from me or from anybody else here, and we're all committed to doing that work.